Thank you for tuning in to Voices for Freedom, an anti-human trafficking podcast. We want to acknowledge that the content we discuss can be emotionally challenging and may evoke strong reactions. The stories we share often delve into tough subjects related to human trafficking, which may be difficult for some listeners to hear. Our goal is to raise awareness and promote understanding of the complexities surrounding human trafficking. Listener discretion is advised. Coming up on Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast.
And I remember they showed this girl, and I believe she was 14, and this guy had just tried to pay for sex with her. And he got a ticket and went home to his wife, and she went to jail and had all these things put in place where now she had to go through the whole process. And I just sat there thinking, why are the laws so lenient that these guys are willing to risk that? And I was really just full of emotion. I think he should have had a sign put in his yard that said, I like to pay for sex with girls.
Welcome to Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast. I'm so excited today because I get the opportunity to talk to June, who is the chairman of our Survivor Advisory Board and helps us make very important decisions, leads us on how to engage with survivors into helping them have the best quality care. And June is willing to come today and to share her story. Her story is impactful, it's powerful, and I think that everybody will learn a lot from just listening to her and sitting at her feet and learning from her wisdom. June, thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, Jess. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Anytime we get to sit down and have a conversation, I always have a good time.
Me too. Me too. And I'm really looking forward to sharing what trafficking is, put kind of a real face to it. Because I wouldn't know if you would have asked me years ago, up until I was grown and I had kids. I had no idea what trafficking was really, much less that I was trafficked.
Which is an incredible story, June, and I'm really grateful that you're willing to share your story today because, like you said, I think you're going to help educate so many people on what trafficking is and even maybe people like you that didn't know that you were trafficked. So, June, first, thank you for being willing to share your story, and why don't you tell us, how did you find out that you had been trafficked?
Well, I was grown. It was about 10 years ago, and I had decided to go back to school. My kids were older, and I had some time. So I went back to school, and I was at university, and one day my class was canceled. And I had this span of about 3 hours that I could waste. And so I was wandering around campus, and then I saw a sign that said there was a free viewing for a movie. I thought, perfect. I can go watch a movie. I can do that. So I kind of wandered in this auditorium right as the lights were kind of going down and went in and sat down. And the movie was actually a documentary, and it was about sex trafficking. It was called Sex and Money, and it was all about this group of college kids that went around the U.S. to raise awareness and shine a light on this is happening everywhere in our own backyards, in every community. And so I thought, well, okay, let's watch this. And I spent the whole first half of that documentary, I slowly started seeing, oh, wait, that's what trafficking is. And then I started to identify with the people they were showing. This girl was abused and raped, and a family member profited from that. And then they would show a girl that ended up going on the street because she was kicked out of her home, and someone who said they cared about her ended up exploiting her and betraying her. And slowly I started realizing, oh my gosh, that's part of my story. And I started connecting, if that's what trafficking is, that means I was trafficked. And I tried really hard to wrap my head around that. And then the whole second half of that documentary, I got really upset because they were showing these girls were getting arrested and put in these positions where it affected them long term. And these men, I remember they showed this girl, and I believe she was 14, and this guy had just tried to pay for sex with her. And he got a ticket and went home to his wife. And she went to jail and had all these things put in place where now she had to go through the whole process. And I just sat there thinking, why are the laws so lenient that these guys are willing to risk that? And I was really just full of emotion and trying to take all of this in and getting frustrated at what wasn't happening.
So the man buying her got a ticket.
Yeah, I remember they showed this. They showed a hotel and all these doors. And this girl, I remember she was, I think she was 15. But they showed her there. And this guy had come to knock on the door. And they'd arranged for him to pay for sex with her. And he got a ticket and went home. And I remember, I think he should have had a sign put in his yard that said, I like to pay for sex with girls. I still think that might be a good way to go. So I was just really connecting with, oh my gosh, this happened to me. And why is this happening? Why are we not doing more? So when the movie was ending, I thought, I just got to get out of here. Still trying to wrap my head around what I had just witnessed and the realization of, oh my gosh, that means I was trafficked. And I stood up to leave and the lights went on, but nobody moved. And I'd missed the opening of the documentary where they said the filmmakers were there. So up at the front, there was a stage and they kind of filed on the stage. And it was these students that had toured and made the documentary. And then a couple of guys in suits and people started asking questions. It was like a forum, an open forum. And I was just kind of in my own head, wasn't paying attention until a girl over on this side stood up and said, I'm going to use the voice too, because this is what it sounded. She said, I just want to say, if these girls would have just dressed modestly, and I'm not even sure what she said after that, because I was so enraged. Like, I was so upset and just could not believe the ignorance and the thought that, really? And I must have been showing it physically, because that's when I heard a voice say, you up there, do you have something to say? Do you have a question? And I saw people turn and look at me, and I guess I had been just bouncing up and down. And all of a sudden, I just thought, yeah, I got something to say. And I stood up, said a few words to the girl over here, and then I just said, if this is what trafficking is, if trafficking is being exploited, taken advantage of, put in a position where you are having sex with someone against your will without knowing, and someone else is profiting on that, then I was trafficked. And I was trafficked by my mother. And that was the first time I'd even said it out loud, much less realized, oh my gosh, this is what it's called. And then I got upset with the guys in the suits and said, why aren't you doing something? We put you in this position. We've basically hired you. Do your job. Why are the laws so lenient that these men are willing to risk everything? Like, it's not a big deal. They go home to their wives, and these girls continue on with obvious trauma and having to go to court and being scared and exploited. And it's the court system is a crazy cycle of so much trauma and emotion. And I was just furious that nothing was being done, that I felt justified them in the position where they can change the laws or fight to make the laws tougher or stronger. And then I sat down and the place kind of erupted and I just wanted to get out of there again. And it was a lot. I hadn't said anything out loud before, even to myself.
That's a lot to even state for the very first time in front of that audience. And that really was that realization. I'm watching what I've been through. And we are going to take a short break and then we're going to come back and we're going to hear more about June's story and what she's been through specifically. And we're really grateful that June is going to be willing to share that. But can you imagine you're sitting in an auditorium? You're watching a documentary, and then you realize that the documentary is about your life and the trauma that you've been through, and there starts to become vocabulary around that and words around that and what that's like. That's what June went through. We're so grateful for her sharing, and we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. I want to thank today's sponsor, the Our Rescue Store, for supporting this podcast. Did you know that Our Rescue Store features survivor-made items? In this critical fight, they serve as symbols of hope. By choosing to purchase one of these beautifully handmade items, you will impact the healing journey of survivors and help them reclaim their lives in the process. We encourage you to shop survivor-made items on the Our Rescue website. It might only be a few dollars to you, but it makes a world of difference to them. And in case you need any extra motivation, use promo code VOICES10 for 10% off your purchase at store.ourrescue.org. That's VOICES10 at store.ourrescue.org. Welcome back to Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast. I'm here with June, who is the chairman of Our Rescue's board, and she helps us with all the survivor advisory care and what to do and how to provide the best quality of service. So June, thank you again for being here.
Absolutely.
Thank you for sharing your story, and what a powerful story of I was an adult when I realized what happened to me as a child. And I know that that is some people's story, because trafficking wasn't a conversation when I was a kid.
And I was a kid way longer than farther back than you were. There wasn't a name for it. So as intense as that was, what really stuck with me was what happened next. I just want to leave again. But I got up to leave, and there was a boy way off in the corner that locked eyes with me. And he looked, you could tell he'd had a rough life. He had kind of long, kind of greasy hair. And I remember he had eyeliner on, and he had these gloves that the tips of the fingers were sticking out. And he looked like if someone walked by you, if he walked by you on the sidewalk, you might move your purse to the other side. But he locked eyes with me from, you know, way over on the other side of the auditorium, and he did not break eye contact. And he slowly made his way to me, and I'm in stadium seating. I can't go anywhere. So I just kind of stood and waited, and he came down the aisle, didn't say anything, and he had a book with him. And he opened the book, and then he turned it around and held it in front of me. And he was really close. And I looked down, and it was his journal. And it said, I didn't want to come today. There was an older lady in the back who said everything I can't say. It said, I don't have a voice. Today she was my voice. I remember reading that thinking, oh my gosh. And I looked up at him, and he just had these tears running down his eyes. And I gave him a hug, and we talked for a few minutes. And his name was Riley. And he had been in a community, a religious community, that once the boys kind of moved up, he had been kicked out and on the streets. And someone had come along and told him, we'll take care of you. And then it soon became, here's how you're going to pay your way. And I listened to his story, just a little short bit that he was willing to share in the moment. And I promised him right then and there, I will be the voice. And if I have nothing else, I have a voice, and I will share your story and whatever else it takes so that those who don't feel that they're heard, I'll be their voice for them. And that, I remember walking out of the auditorium that day through the parking lot and thinking, I had just made a choice in life that would take me in a whole different direction, and there was no going back, and it would be tough. But I 100% thought it'll be worth it, and I am determined to be that voice. And wow, here I am now.
So, June, you are sitting in an auditorium while in university. You're attending college. You're there. You have 3 extra hours. And so you go and watch this documentary. It wasn't planned.
No.
You're watching this documentary. And what in the documentary made you realize that you had been trafficked? What was the first thing that you were like, oh, that's me? And you mentioned that happened within your family.
Right. It was a girl. They were showing this girl who her family had set it up. And I didn't know, but I now know that familial trafficking happens so much. And not just sex trafficking, but labor trafficking. And I connected with that. I just spent a whole lifetime thinking, man, I am so unlucky. These things keep happening. I had no idea it was trafficking. I just knew I kept finding myself in these positions where I would be assaulted. And it was being set up by my mother. And I didn't, if you would have asked me, if you would have come up and said, hey, are you being trafficked? I would have had no idea what you were talking about. If you said, you know, is someone hurting you and abusing you? I wouldn't have even known how to respond to that because that's just the way it was. And unfortunately, that happens quite a bit.
Yeah. What an amazing journey, because I think sometimes it's hard for us to realize what happens to us. And then if we do realize some trauma, then we get stuck and we feel like we can't do anything about it, where it's like, this happened to me, I identify it, and now I just have to live with this in my body, and I can't do anything about it. But you had this conversation in the hallway with, did you say Riley?
Yeah. I was still standing in my stadium seating. I was still standing there because I couldn't get out.
You were still
out
in the auditorium.
Yeah. And you know what? It led to, I now look back and think, man, that so many people I've met who had no idea. I have a friend that I met outside of this, and we just started talking. When I met her, we started talking about what we did, and I had just come back from speaking and kind of sharing my story. And she said, I spent years in, she was from a community, she was in a Native American community, and she said, I grew up with uncles coming over, and they would take my hand and take me back to a bedroom. And this woman, you would never know to look at her. You would never know, man, this is what she experienced. And she said, I went years and years going through having this and thinking that is just part of life. And then she finally said something to a teacher, and they came in, and instead of getting her therapy or support, because they're not trauma-informed, they removed her from the house and put her with a family member, and the family member was one of the people that was doing it to her. So the voice of the survivor, they weren't listening to what she needed or what she was scared of or what her fears were. Instead, they did what they thought she needed. And, you know, often I've learned a lot over the past years going around and speaking and talking to law enforcement and prosecutors and advocates and social workers, and people have such good intentions, but knowing firsthand from a survivor what that feels like and best practices makes a big difference. And so if someone would have come along to her and said, hey, tell me what this feels like, or tell me the questions they could ask instead of, we're going to remove you from this home and put you here, it could have been, what would make you feel safe? What happens at home that you wish could be better? Because unfortunately, when it's your family, you still protect them. You still feel for, and it's a trauma bond, and it's very real.
And you're trying to ask questions so that they don't feel like they're betraying their family, especially if it's a parent, where it's, parents are supposed to be the ones that protect their kids, that fight for their kids.
Exactly.
And I think it's natural for us to feel that. So when it is your mom or your dad that's trafficking you or abusing you or exploiting you, it's, how do I not betray them and yet still say, I'm hurting and they are doing this to me? And I think those questions are so important for everybody to know.
And it's such a, and that, aside from that, there's something that happens mentally when you realize that it was a family member, the one person that should love you and protect you the most, when they're the ones who betrayed you, it is really hard to trust anyone else, to feel like you have any worth. If they can't love me and protect me, am I even worth being loved? And it's hard. It's hard to to move past that, because it does a number on who you are, who you feel you are. Your self-worth is just chipped away at. And so you don't believe you're worthy of people helping you or that you deserve it. And it's rough. It's tough. And part of what I love about, which is also healing for me to go around and speak and kind of educate people, is I get to tell them, this is what it feels like to be the little girl behind the desk and the girl who's scared. And then they learn best practices and how they can rephrase how they're doing things, the questions to ask the right way. And it helps heal me every time I'm able to go out and kind of share and help educate and answer their questions. It also helps me kind of, okay, turn pain into purpose. Mm. And for me, that was really healing personally.
Yeah. And I've met your husband and you have children and grandkids and you have an amazing family. How have you been able to help them even be trauma-informed? Because I feel like trauma-informed is a phrase that gets thrown out.
It is.
And people say it, but they don't really know what that means. So I think as a survivor, you're one of the best people to teach people what does that mean to be trauma-informed, whether that's you're trying to educate your own personal family or the community or a friend that's helping other people or an anti-trafficking organization wanting to be trauma-informed. And so what does that mean? What does that look like?
You know, the biggest thing for me that when we go out and try and explain what it means is trauma-informed isn't something you learn. It's something that you live and you become. It's how you look at things. So, for example, I was explaining it to a group the other day. We were asked to go work with Homeland Security over in American Samoa, and we were explaining it to them. And it really connected when I said, okay, guys, it's trauma-informed is like, let's say your mother-in-law comes over every week, and when she comes over, you just already know what to expect. And so you know she's going to talk a long time, so you've got your own room. You've got snacks in there because you just – it's how you prepare because you already know what's coming. For an organization that's trauma-informed, they know that I might come into the space and something might make me feel really uncomfortable that you wouldn't understand. For example, I have to know where an exit is. If I'm sitting somewhere, I want to know where my exits are. I don't want to be in a room without a window if I have a bunch of people in there. And there's little things that you don't get. It's the way that you approach people. It's how you engage and also how you understand. Instead of looking at someone and thinking, oh my gosh, who are you? Why are you acting like this? Instead of saying, why are you the way you are? Trauma-informed is what's happened to you to make you get to this point. And once we shift that perspective, people are so open to being better and changing. And it's good for survivors as well, because a lot of organizations can have really good intentions and just really get it wrong. We went and visited this organization once that was really good. They had a lot of stuff in place and we thought, you're doing such a great job. And then this lady said, well, we've got some really great rules here. And there was this lady who had been being beat up and really struggled. And they kept asking her, you know, come, we have help for you. We have all these resources for months. And then one night, this girl was brave enough to say, okay, I'm ready. And she showed up at the organization, at the safe house, and they took her in. And she was scared and nervous, but she was brave. And her way of coping with that anxiousness and that uneasiness and her fear was to smoke. And so she was in her room smoking and nervous, and the staff came in. Now, they're telling me this. They're telling me how this happened. They said, we went in there. We told her right away, there's no smoking here. And she said she has to smoke, and so we had to let her go. And I just thought, so I had to explain to them, it's not the letter of the law, it's the spirit of it. Who are you trying to help if you're saying, sorry, we have rules, we'll catch you next time, go on. So it was good for them, for me to say, well, let me tell you what that would feel like for me. If I went to someone for help and they, because of something, I was a coping, like she needed something. let's work. I would have felt like they don't really care. They're not here to help me. And I wouldn't come back. So trauma-informed for them was to stop and look at it from a different perspective. And we put together a plan like, okay, so if there's no smoking, what can you do? Instead of saying, we don't do this, what can you do? And meet them where they are. So if that's what she needs, then let's have a designated zone. Trauma-informed would be, let's have a patch. Let's, you know, think outside the box. But it's about how can we best help this person instead of what are we supposed to do on paper that makes sense for us?
That makes so much sense. And I love what you said, where it's not something you learn. It's something that you live. And maybe you have to hear it first and understand what that is. But it really does have to be an internal change if somebody wants to be trauma-informed, where they meet people where they're at, where they say, your coping mechanism is smoking. Okay, then how can we help empower this person to be able to be in a program that they're wanting to be in? They're wanting healing. They're wanting love. They're wanting to be able to work through some of this pain and trauma.
Yeah.
And to be...
And can you imagine? Can you imagine you go, you finally ask for help, which is hard for a lot of people. You finally become vulnerable enough to say, I need help. And then they put conditions on helping you. That's and all that does is reinforce, I don't trust them. They don't really care. So it's harder for the next person to come along and it's harder for them to take that next step again. So we try really hard to get out there and really educate. And I'm so grateful I get to do that. I've been able to sit with prosecutors and say, let me tell you, there's certain words I don't want to have to say. I remember being 12 years old and having to sit on the stand and I had a really good advocate, or I don't know that I would have been able to do it, that walked me through, okay, here's where you're going to sit. Took me in and said, this is where you're going to sit. You only have to look over here once and let's talk about what words you can say. And I didn't want to say certain words. At 12, you barely want to acknowledge what happened, much less talk about it. But she was great. She was trauma-informed. They gave me something to hold. They walked me through and we practiced saying those words. And you're only going to have to look over here. And all those things add up. One of the biggest things when we are able and I get to go speak to like law enforcement and healthcare is, you know, they think there's these big, huge things that you can do. But really for me, it's the little things. It's being authentic. There's a difference between saying, like I remember being at a hospital once and being checked out. And there's a difference between someone leaning in and saying, here's your paperwork. We have resources. If you need help, here's a number, you know, okay. There's that. Or there's the nurse that just leans over and touches your hand and says, you call them. Because authentic, when you're authentic, when I had a nurse just grab my hand and squeeze it and say, you call them. And if you don't get through, you call me. That's it. I remember sitting on a rock on the side of my driveway. I had this guy's arm around my neck, and I thought, okay, I'm going to pass out. I'm not going to be able to breathe. So I bit his arm. That's all I had left to do. And my mother called the police on me, and they showed up. And nothing was being done from my perspective. And I was sitting on this big rock outside in the driveway. And a policeman, they were getting ready to leave and get in their car, and one of them stopped and walked over to me. And all he did was lean down, touch my knee, and he said, you deserve better. And for some reason, in that moment, I believed him. So it's not, you know, you think, what are these, all these things that you can do, but what it comes down to is caring and engaging authentically, because those words sustained me until I was able to do something about it. So I appreciate being able to go out and talk to people, because I can see I've had prosecutors and, all sorts of people and officials come up and say, I never saw it that way before. And it seems like something so simple, but to hear it firsthand and say, you know what, this made a difference for me. And I can see that it does.
Well, and June, you are so authentic in how you interact with people as well. You live it out. You live what you preach, as far as the being authentic and being able right. to really meet people where they're at. And I appreciate you sharing those things. I feel like I always learn something when I listen to you, and I'm so grateful. I think our listeners are learning as well. One of the things that I agree with so wholeheartedly that I share with people all the time is that there is a power when you just show up to somebody with love, with unconditional love, where it really is something that sounds elementary, but it's so powerful. Sitting at a table, not having your phone, being fully engaged with
authentic.
Somebody.
Authentic. Just be real.
Yep. So, June, thank you for bringing that to our audience. Audience, I hope that you are able to absorb these things that June is saying. These are the things that you can do, that you can apply to your circle, and how to engage with survivors, how to show up tonight. You can apply this today. So, June, thank you for sharing this. We're going to come back in just a short time and have one more segment with June, and I'm so excited for this last segment. I feel like everything that June is sharing is applicable to anybody and all circumstances. And to be able to really identify what does trafficking look like in our own community. We're talking about your backyard. And so thank you for joining us, and we'll be right back. Big thanks to this week's sponsor, the Our Rescue Store, for supporting the podcast. The Our Rescue Store is committed to responsibly sourcing products that unite conversations about human trafficking, raising awareness, and contributing to the movement against it. With more than enough colors, designs, and items to choose from, there is definitely something for you. Find something you'll be proud to own and be an advocate for change. Visit store.ourrescue.org. and use promo code VOICES10 for 10% off your purchases. That's VOICES10 on store.ourrescue.org. Welcome back to Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast. My name is Jessica, and I am here with June, the chairman of our Survivor Advisory Board. And today we are also going to share with you, what does Our Rescue do, and how do we best serve survivors? And truly, the person that we get advice from is our Survivor Advisory Board. And this is something that I've learned through the years, because I started working with survivors in my 20s.
A long time.
And I have had to ask for forgiveness, because I have not always done it perfectly with helping survivors or empowering them. I've learned a lot, and I feel like I'm still learning. And I think that's why it's so important for Our Rescue to have a Survivor Advisory Board. And we've been so honored to have you as our chairman. So, June, would you share with our audience, what does the Our Rescue Survivor Advisory Board do? What's the goal, the purpose, and the mission of that?
That's a good question. When Our Rescue said, hey, this is what we're thinking, what a brilliant idea. So the main concept is, let's get survivors, and not just someone who we say, hey, you want to come join the team? Who can fill that spot, and it helps them as well. So it's important that they're in a position where this is something that benefits them as well. But we're creating a board that is worldwide. So we have the expertise, and there's all different kinds of trafficking. Maybe it was in the family. Maybe it was through a boyfriend, or whatever it was, that we kind of cover all of those. Are we in the LGBTQ community? Whatever we can bring, so that we have a well-versed kind of a council that can advise on everything from programs to events to how we are engaging through education, through how we do things in-house, behind the scenes. I've been really impressed, especially over the last year. I just f- for example, I said, listen, I would feel more comfortable. I don't want to get out and say, this is a really great program, unless I've stood there and I know the people and I've seen it for myself, because I've seen the ones that go wrong. And to their credit, you know, our rescue said, okay, let's do it. They doubled down and said, all right, let's make it happen. And so I get to go. And if I'm telling you about the Survivor Store, I know the people, I know the organizations, I can tell you why it's there, who's done it. I've met the women who are making these bags. I got to go out on a reservation and meet some amazing women who are making bags. And it's not just helping survivors, but prevention through vulnerable populations and communities that are often overlooked or marginalized. And so we're able to go in there and knowing, being able to have the resources of a survivor advisory board, we are able to say, this will work. And this is what's worked for me. And we need to treat them this way. And this is what you need to expect. So even everything from, we have an event coming up. They now, our rescue now has a room where if something happens and someone feels anxiety or triggered, whatever it is, there's a safe spot for them to go. And everybody knows that. And they know what to provide. And, you know, if you've been through something traumatic, survivors, they need choice. So it's not just here's something to do and here's something to eat. It's what would you like? Often we don't get a choice. And so just little things make such a big difference. And I love, and I'm so impressed with the direction that we're going. And I'm just grateful that I've been able to step into a role and feel so supported and so empowered. It's going to be amazing.
Oh, thank you, June. And I will say one of the mistakes I personally have made is trying to protect survivors instead of just asking and giving them the choice. And there was an event before where I made a mistake and I was trying to protect survivors from getting questions asked to them that they might be uncomfortable with. So I thought, okay, I'm going to protect survivors by not putting them in this position. And that way they won't get asked about things that these other people might be not trauma-informed, and they might ask questions that trigger a survivor. And what I should have done, and I've learned, thank goodness, I've learned, is ask the survivor, would this be better? Would this be better? You might get asked uncomfortable questions if you're around this group of people. Are you okay with that?
Right.
And I truly am grateful for you, for your voice, and for the Survivor Advisory Board, because I think it helps us, one, say, will you forgive me? And two, let's do things differently and have advice from people that understand what it's like to be in that position.
Yeah.
And you're doing an amazing job with leading that team and really being a voice for the survivors and bringing everyone together.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. And you guys have been great. You were so good to say, oh my gosh, I had no idea. And then what can we do differently? How can we be better? And I love that. And actually what we do now is we've got something in place. So any survivor that works with us, our rescue, now we're able to say, okay, let's fill this out together. What are you comfortable with? What are the expectations so that we don't assume someone's okay or not okay with something. That incident you were talking about, you know, I remember that very well. And I remember at one point thinking, what am I doing? How these guys are like, they don't get it. They don't get it. I don't want to be a part of this. And then half an hour later thinking, oh my gosh, this is exactly why they need me. And so the change in perspective was great. And the feedback was, thank you so much. Please show us what we can do better. And that was a game changer. It was really good. And so now we've taken so many steps in the right direction, and we're making sure, you know, everyone that works behind the scenes is trauma informed. And I can tell you the first time I walked in the OUR offices, our rescue offices, people didn't know how to talk. I was like a mascot or a novelty. And I know that they felt, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. I don't want to bother them. But the message it gave to me, and I know other survivors that have come and engaged in that space, was I'm different. I'm not worthy of them talking to me. I'm not seen as equal. And so we've really worked to shift that. And part of me being there and having a presence is they now, I don't feel that, and they don't feel that. And we've kind of walked through what's appropriate, what's not. And there's a real shift in how things are done, and it's really amazing. It's pretty inspiring to watch the change and see where the direction's taking.
Well, thank you, June, and thank you for helping us grow and be better. And I think that that's a good message to other anti-trafficking organizations as well, is if you've messed up in the past or you have done something that's hurt somebody, go ask for forgiveness and do better and be better and
be teachable.
Yep.
Yeah, be teachable and be willing to acknowledge, hey, what did we do right and what could we do better? And then listen to understand, just really listen and move forward. And those are the best organizations that really, really change things for the better.
Thank you, June.
You're welcome.
It's easy to want to quit when you mess up and say, I didn't do this right. I'm just going to leave and I'm not going to continue to fight trafficking. But I think what's more powerful is, what did we do wrong? How can we be better? How can we actually support survivors and do survivor care?
And it's good. I remember thinking, if they're willing to be vulnerable and say, okay, that's on me, then we can join team. We can join forces here because they're willing to be vulnerable as well. And so I think it's a benefit for someone to say, you know, we're being asked to be vulnerable all the time and it's like exposing yourself. And so in that moment, it was good to see someone else saying, I'm going to be raw here and uncomfortable and say, that one's on me. And if you're willing to do that, then I'm okay joining forces with you because I know you get it. And team up and we'll do amazing things together.
Well, thank you, June. And thank you for this very vulnerable conversation.
Absolutely.
You're sharing your story, your heart, some of the things you've been through, and some of the people that have had such an impact in your life, like that boy that was in the stadium that really helped you say, I will be a voice for change.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you, June. And thank you to everybody listening. I hope that you really were able to engage with this story, with this podcast, because it is applicable. Like I said, everything that June said is things that you can be watching for. You hear her story, and now you can look for other people that might be going through things like this. And you really can show up to other people's lives, from your family to your friends to your neighbors, with authentic love and be fully present with them. So thank you for joining us. Join us next time, and we'll hopefully be sharing more information with you that you find engaging and life-changing.
Thanks for listening. Did you enjoy this episode? If so, please leave us a review and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have ideas for future episodes, email us at voicesforfreedom@ourrescue.org. Lastly, we encourage you to join the fight. Make a difference today by donating at ourrescue.org or text podcast to 75004. Again, that number is 75004.
Next week on Voices for Freedom, join us as we take the podcast on the road for the first time to Indianapolis. There, Matt Osborne will sit down with Todd Jordan, owner and chief trainer at Jordan Detection Canine. You might have heard of a bomb-sniffing dog, but these dogs are specifically trained to sniff out electronic storage devices that are well hidden by perpetrators and might go undetected by law enforcement. As you might imagine, finding this evidence is critical to prosecuting pedophiles and bringing justice to survivors. Whether you're a follower of Our Rescue, a donor to our cause, or even a law enforcement officer looking for the newest tools and resources available to help in your investigations, you won't want to miss this episode. And if you usually listen via one of our audio-only sources like Spotify or iTunes, this episode you'll want to watch on our YouTube channel. so you can see these dogs in action. We're so excited to share this with you. So make sure to subscribe and tune in next week.